Hello there, my name is Sheila Grace Harvey and welcome to Relationship Revelations. Today's show is going to be about You Are the Blessings. And it happens to be the title of the book that's written by my guest today, John Morton. And John's also the spiritual director of the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, MSIA, which I have talked about quite a lot on the various shows. It's a non-denominational church, and John teaches practical spirituality and soul transcendence. And on a personal note, I've known John for over 25 years. And to me, it's his devotion and dedication to spirit, and also his amazing loving and service, which always are an inspiration to me. So it's a blessing to have you with us today. Welcome, John.
Nice to be with you all.
That's great. So, John, you've been kind of called the blessings man. And I suppose when you look at what's going on at the planet at the moment, I mean, you've only got to look in the States at the moment. There are hurricanes, there's a train crash in California. And I think on a personal level, many people are really financially challenged. And there's a lot of fear around. So where are all the blessings and all of the things that are going on at present?
Well, it's in everywhere and everything. So that's what makes it easy. My mom had a saying, you know, these are those things that you listen to your mom, or maybe you called her your mom. Mm-hmm. It's always something. And I've learned that there's a choice in that, so it's always a blessing. And there's a view where you could find it a curse, or it's bad, or evil, or wrong, or all those kinds of ways of looking. And personally, I just find there's a great preference for tuning into what the blessings are.
Well, one of the things that we do a lot in MSIA is we do a thing called calling in the light, and I'm just wondering whether you would be happy to do that and, you know, a prayer for all those people out there that maybe have any concerns or worries or fears at this time.
Sure. That's my privilege, honor, and blessing. Lord God, you can hear us now and reach out to everyone who's listening in any way or touched by this prayer, that we would extend it in your light and your love, that you bring forward greater good, and that is according to each person, each situation, in whatever way would serve for the best. We are also willing to let go of our judgments, our attachments, so that we may heal, we may learn, we may make better choices in whatever situations we find ourselves. And we especially ask for compassion, understanding, peace to come amongst us so we are more conscious of the beauty, the grace, and the joy that is always present in our midst. Amen.
That was lovely. Thank you. You know, John, this morning when I was meditating and I went into this kind of silent time, and a neighbor of mine had the Beatles on, and the song that was playing was The Long and Winding Road, and of course the part of that which says, leads me to your door. And I thought, thinking of talking to you today, I thought, well, that's really quite apt, because many of us, when we're, you know, going home to God or on that path of seeking, we kind of get caught up in the illusions of the world. So what sort of suggestions can you give us to assist us how to get back on track again?
Well, there has to be an openness that there's something better, that there is a track that represents what's better. So there's a conscious decision to look for the blessing. That's a big key. And if we're focused on what's bothering us or upsetting us, after a while, that gets old, it doesn't work, it also leads to things like suffering and pain, and frustration, sadness. So it's that awareness that there's a better choice, and also the willingness to make that choice. Obviously, if we're lost, if we have a sense that we don't know what to do, or we have a sense of devastation, that's a great time to ask for assistance. It can be just a simple prayer. It can be, instead of why did this have to happen, which may not really service to what can I do? Just a simple question like that, and we don't necessarily need to know who's listening. But the openness to ask from a higher source, higher consciousness, God, however we would choose to relate to the better ways that can come forward.
So in terms of maybe looking for the short and the straight road, that's really soul transcendence. And the business of MSIA really is about soul transcendence. And John Roger has always said that if you would learn the secret of soul transcendence, look only for the good, for the divine, in people and things, and all the rest leave to God. So could you talk to us a little bit about soul transcendence?
Be happy to. It's basically a simple idea of relating to ourselves as a soul, and that a soul is the consciousness of the divine. It's the spark. It's what's in our life force. It's what brings life into a newborn, into everything. And that is it's a consciousness that has intelligence. It has the aspect that can overcome whatever are the limitations of this world, including death. So if it can overcome death, and whatever is short of death, it can overcome that too. So it's really choosing to begin the process one step at a time, one day at a time, to initiate ourselves into our divine awareness. It can happen very spontaneously. It could happen with others in formalized or religious ways. You know, for me, it isn't something where we're following something outside of ourselves. It's much more about contacting and connecting with the consciousness that is God and the divine source in. And it's wonderful to worship with others, to come together in a gathering where we're looking toward our God or our divine source, and finding what is in our midst. As often there are collective ways for us to work out our problems and our issues of the day.
Wow. Now, you hold what is called the traveler consciousness, and one of the things that I got out of one of your blessings was the traveler's purpose is to anchor the light and love that is the Christ, the anointing of the Spirit of God that comes with the soul. Could you tell us a little bit more about what the job of the traveler is?
Well, the primary job is something we call anchoring, and that's invisible. It's not something that is seen unless people see it through the Spirit. So, you know, what a traveler is doing on the planet is an anchoring for a divine transmission into the planet. So it's very simple. It's almost like being a battery pull or something like that. And it doesn't really require outwardly that there's any particular vocation or outward designation. So it could be something, for the most part, that people don't recognize or pay any attention to, for that matter. So that's the basic part. And then the other part is that whoever is anchoring that consciousness of the traveler often is guided and led into doing things with the transformation where they are. So it's always beginning in the situation where the traveler is located physically, but it also is working spiritually with what's going on the planet. So it's a kind of office, if you will, that allows for doing things for the whole planet and doing things on a very personal level.
Mm-hmm. And that's working through the Christ.
Yes. But what is that? See, that's something mm-hmm. that you can say that word and you can look it up
yes.
in Wikipedia or somewhere and say, oh, you know, the Christ is this. But until there's an experience of that, that there's an anointing, and what I mean by that is an authorization that comes from the Spirit, by the Spirit. And well, what do I mean by the Spirit? That's the presence of the divine. I would kind of look at it as, well, what is it to be a saint? What is it to be someone who has an enlightenment or an awakening? And I don't mean to say that in some exclusive way. I mean to say that everybody has that potential, that we're all in a process of awakening, of enlightening ourselves by our life experience. And it becomes more and more important. Do we cooperate with who we are as a soul, or do we in some way attempt to avoid it or deny it or some approach like that?
Yes, it seems kind of unfortunate in many respects that it often takes something that happens in our lives, you know, whether it's personal, like, you know, a relationship ends, a house burns down, we lose our job or whatever it is, or even what's going on in the planet, for us to actually turn inward to really that main relationship, which is what we have with Spirit.
Right. And I think there are ways that we can know that and recognize that in ourselves and with one another. And primarily that's all through loving, that it works through that as a universal way, universal connection. Loving is the way. Loving is the consciousness of the Spirit. That's the greater part of it. And it doesn't necessarily always come in a way that's comfortable or that we understand, but if we get to the essence of what it is, we find that loving is what we are experiencing.
In fact, there's a little quote from the other book that you wrote, which was The Blessings Already Are, and you say, if you were entirely loving, nothing would bother you.
That's right. And how many of us can make it through a day where we have that experience all day long, or even for a minute?
Mm-hmm. And yet one of the other things that you've said, which is I think is a lovely thing to hold, and that is, my dedication is that no matter what the condition, I love. So it's just choosing to keep coming back into that loving all the time, isn't it?
Yes, and I find that quite humbling. Mm-hmm. That really is an invitation to let go of any sense of elitism or superiority or anything like that. As I find regularly, it's more a process of letting go, more of a process of being open, being a student, being willing to serve, to be someone who is an example of what loving is and what living the truth that comes from God is.
Well, I'm going to do a little quote from your book on page 198, and it says, the people in a relationship to the mystical traveler are in a mystery school. There is a mystery to what we're doing, because we're involved with a consciousness of the divine beyond this world. If you look at this world through the filter of the mind, it is obscured and mysterious. How would you know the truth? You must be true to your purpose and limit the distractions of the material world. Within your soul, you have the eyes to see and ears to hear. So could you talk a little bit to us about when we say we're in a mystery school?
Well, it's kind of in a classic sense that, in terms of going back through history in different cultures and times across the planet, that there were groups or individuals, and maybe a handful or something like that, that were involved in things that were not for public presentation because of the nature of the social circumstances, that there was persecution. I'm sure people realize that persecution can be very extreme, so that it's considered blasphemy or it's considered heresy or something punishable by death. So the necessity and the practical aspect of a mystery school often is that it's hidden, or it's the occult. And it's a necessary practical reality of dealing with the world when you're a lamb amongst predators. practically now, I think that we're in an age when, in a great many ways, there's much more freedom to be open. So it's not so mysterious in terms of what it's doing in the world, but it's much more according to each person, whether they have the eyes to see or the ears to hear. Because often people do look at what is represented as a truth or a way of transcending the challenges of this world, and they reject them or they don't agree. And that's part of the freedom of each person's nature, is to look and decide for each one's own experience how to respond, whether there's agreement, whether there's participation.
You know, as you were saying that, I was kind of reflecting on peace on the planet and the fact that that's, you know, I think an intention that a lot of us would like to see, peace on the planet. And yet it does start with each one of us. How do we get into that greater peace within ourselves?
Well, first, a great part of it would be to want it, to have the intention, the desire, the willingness. And those are easy things to say, and it's another thing to do that when you're dealing with somebody that doesn't like you or doesn't agree with you, you know, however that comes across. I mean, it can be, how do you have peace with somebody who's rude to you or wants to hurt you? How do you do that? And there is a way. There's a peace that transcends any condition, any way. And often it is the challenge in the moment to find the peace in ourself in the face of our circumstances, including our own emotional state or mental state that can be at war in some way. How do we find the peace so that we let go of the way of againstness and come into the way of agreement and cooperation?
You know, I was reflecting back to a time when I was experiencing a difficulty with one of my family members, and I think you had said something along the lines of to be of service to them, but to kind of stay far enough away from them because I was concerned they were actually going to physically strike them. So there is kind of a practicality, really, in all of the teachings and what we're learning, and that is that, you know, sometimes you can love somebody, but you don't want to be too close to them.
Yes, we call it practical spirituality. Mm-hmm. You know, that we have ground rules within MSI that John Roger has identified, and they're fairly simple. There's take care of yourself so you can take care of others, don't hurt yourself and don't hurt others, and use everything for your upliftment, learning, and growth. And, you know, we can spend all day long practicing those ground rules to see how close we can get so that we're using everything for upliftment and we're finding ways to get along with those who are nearby in such a way as we're not against anyone or anything, and yet we're doing what we need to do to grow, to be healthy, to be happy.
When I was in a seminar with you, you were working with somebody who was distressed because she felt she couldn't really do more to help her child. And I remember one of the things you said was that maybe her only job was just to unconditionally love her child and for her child to know that. And it was at that moment that I recognized that my mother totally unconditionally loved me. And what an incredible gift that was. I think sometimes we have a lot of expectations of what we think we should be doing with people, but often it really does keep coming back down to how do we hold the loving for ourselves and for others, because in that a lot of other things can just be resolved.
Right, and even if we don't act like it, that we love unconditionally, or the one who's nearby doesn't act like it either, that we have the compassion, the understanding that past somebody's hurt, past their difficulty, There's a loving being there. There's us all. And, you know, it's helpful to be able to see that and use that as a way to have some kind of understanding of, well, what do we do now? Now that we disagree, now that we've done something we regret or said something we didn't really want to say. And, you know, that's where we find forgiveness, the willingness to let go, the willingness to accept and move on. I find these are qualities of the spiritual nature. You know, this ability and choice to let go and not hang on to any negativity, regardless of how right it might seem at the time.
Yeah. It's a choice, a minute-by-minute choice. And it's often easier not to do the loving thing, but we're practicing, John, so we're just in the we're doing our best.
We're all practicing.
All practiced. Just in terms of relationships, and you know, people often want to know about one-to-one relationships, and I'd heard you talking a little bit about, you know, about picking a partner and just, you know, kind of some of the things to look for in good relationships. And I've heard you say things like, God works a match in love, and where love falls short, love bridges it, which is really lovely. But can you tell us a little bit more about what you would be looking for in choosing a partner?
Well, yes. I look someone who is courageous in the heart. You know, the heart is, to me, is the most magnificent aspect of who we are, and I'm including, but not necessarily referring here to the four-chambered organ in the middle of the chest. You know, I'm really referring to the essence of who we are, that it has a truth about it that comes into our character. So each person has an individual character and nature that we're all learning how to navigate, and that we have a lower nature just as we have a higher nature. And I encourage people to learn how to raise that lower nature so we become more capable of being courageous in who we are, that we're bold, that we're strong, that we're beautiful in the way of our being. And then when we come into a closeness with somebody, I think it really is the key, you know, the key to have closeness with people is to be yourself. And ironically, I think what happens often in relationships is we stop being ourselves. We start finding reasons to hide, to shut down, to deny, to withhold, to be secretive in a way that's dark and not illuminated. And we move away from the sacred, and it becomes very difficult and painful by design. I think that the relationships that move into upheaval where it just no longer functions is because we've somehow shut ourselves down to our life force by not being willing to face one another truly in our being and to come forward with what's up and to tell things that are really important and to find ways to love those differences, you know, that are bound to be there. So, you know, I think it's a willingness to be yourself, to be courageous in your truth is very important. And I think when people are courageous in their truth, they are fantastic in all kinds of ways. There's something very beautiful about someone who's loose, that's not restricted and withheld in their nature. There's something really amazing about it. And we may realize, well, I don't want to live with that person 24/7, but that's fine because somebody else often realizes, well, that's a match for me. And I just have a way of looking at the design of it all with all the individuality and differences that are in our world that there's all kinds of ways to make it work out, to find our genius and not our stupidity, and that we hold ourselves back in a
a lesser form, that we retard ourselves in a way.
You did. There was one thing that I also remember you saying, and I hope I've quoted you pretty well on these. And that is that you know, there is fantasy in a relationship that it will there'll be a wedge in the relationship which will bring the house down. And I'd always remember that because I do think that for many of us, learning how to let go of those illusions and the fantasies that we kind of grew up with is such. You know, transforming time for us to be able to go from that into what I'm hearing you saying is having relationships with much greater freedom and greater openness and honesty in being ourselves, which of course does also take a tremendous amount of being able to be vulnerable and, as you said, a lot of courage. And for a lot of people, that's kind of quite a stretch to get from that letting go of the things that don't work for us and moving into a whole different place. How do you suggest that we can do that more easily?
Well, the more easy way is become stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, what used to be challenging to divulge or put in front of somebody as a revelation, like, here I am, honey, becomes easier because we have the strength to just do it. It also becomes a shortcut to, you know, a beautiful, strong relationship that's lasting because we learn how to work through these differences and understand that there's strength in learning how to love, that love is a bridge. And so if we build a bridge that's stronger and greater than ever before, that relationship becomes stronger and greater than ever before. And it's also inviting someone who's intimate into a place where it's difficult for us to love, that we judge it, that we have shame, or we don't want to reveal certain aspects of ourselves. That it really is magnificent to find somebody who's willing to love in those areas, often in ways we're not willing to love ourselves. You know, that's a great partner, to find someone who in some ways loves you more than you love yourself.
Yeah, that's very beautiful. It's a lovely thing to aspire to for all of us. One of the things, as I said earlier, you're the blessings man. So I was just wondering whether you would be willing to do a blessing for us all.
Well, sure. You know, what I do is it's I've just kind of backed into this. I think you know the part of that story because John Roger, who's my teacher and the founder of the movement of spiritual inner awareness, is someone who regularly would do blessings in his work. And basically it's an invocation. It's a willingness for greater good and the understanding that we have some responsibility to call that forward, to do the invocation, the invitation. And so when people ask me, would you do the blessing, I just look at it as a natural order, you know, that's a gift to be willing to speak to the divine order and allow that to be revealed in this moment, in this situation, so that where there is violence in the world, where there's hurt, where there's suffering, where there's anguish over what we don't understand, or there's confusion, where there's a sense that we're not lovable, or that our life is ruined, or not in the place to be redeemed, that the blessing would come and heal, would restore, and that these are the powers beyond us. It's very important in my way of seeing that we all learn to reach out to God as a partner, that we take this moment in our own openness, however a person sees that. So if they see that in the Christ or through Jesus or through Buddha, or maybe they just call it the higher power. I don't think this is so important. I know there are people that don't agree, that they say it's so important to profess
by name or by title or by authority. I just find God as someone who works with each person breath by breath, heart by heart, and loves us in our simplicity, that God is love. That's a blessing. And that it is upon us to receive that love. And when we receive a breath, as in this moment, to take a pause to celebrate that breath, to understand that it is a gift. It's not a gift that we control. It's not a gift of entitlement because of who we are as a personality. It's a gift from something beyond us. It's a mystery. And as we seek to understand and find the source of that breath and the life that we live, something beautiful takes place. I think we find our innocence is restored, so that the things we've done that we've regretted, that we realize were not our best choices, we ask for a restoration in this moment, a regeneration of what can be healed. So we bring back our goodness, our purity, our innocence. We bring back our sense of enthusiasm for our life. That there's a new day right now. There's an opportunity that we can be led. And for some, we're called upon to humble ourselves, to even come to our knees as a gesture, a demonstration that we are open, that we would put ourselves before God and simply ask for help. That's one of the greatest prayers. Help me. And help us in whatever way we can be helped. And to be willing to cooperate. Sometimes that cooperation is just let it be. Like, move on. If the house has been taken down, find another. Or live with a family for a while and learn the way of that family, the love of that family, the caring. So that we trust when things are taken away, something new of a greater order is being brought forward. It may be in our learning, in our growth. And it may be in things of this world that come as prosperity, happiness, joy. And as we take in these blessings, we're going to be led to be those who assist others and serve others. And that's a blessing. So I extend that to everyone, to the full capacity, to the highest good of all concerned. And it is done. Beirush Beishan, which is a nice way of saying the blessings already are.
That was lovely. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome.
One of the things I love talking about is the journey of the soul, and I've shared, you know, how I kind of, my earlier experiences with the Christ and how I met John Roger, and I'd love to ask you the same. When were you kind of first aware of spirit, God, whatever you call it, and how did you meet J.R.?
First aware, huh? Well, let's do the meeting J.R. part. Yeah, the meeting J.R. part was, first by his voice that I went to somebody's home. This was in 1974, and they played a cassette tape of one of his talks. And at first, I didn't really relate to it very well, but I had experiences that I didn't understand that were mystical in nature. And I had some kind of intelligence inside of me to know that he knew something about what was going on. And so I began to read his books and listen and watch his seminars. And here we are, some 34 years later, and it's still working.
And how did you get to work with John Roger?
Wow, that could be luck, fortune, great blessing, and then also just my willingness to go and express my intention to serve. And essentially that's how I saw it, was I wanted to serve his work, what I saw him doing on the planet, and I just wanted to be part of it somehow, some way. And that's what I consider created the ways and the means to be part of his work and what he established, and then to go forward and offer this work in the way that's been given to me.
John, in MSIA we do a thing called spiritual exercises. Could you talk a little bit about what's the difference between prayer, contemplation, meditation, and what we do as spiritual exercises?
Sure. Prayer is talking to God, being in communication. So you can essentially verbalize, vocalize, whether that's inwardly or even outwardly, whatever is the message or the question. And to remember that there's a two-way communication. So be willing to see and look and learn and hear what comes from God. And I think that's where we find out how willing are we to let go of our preconceptions and our prejudices, our emotional state, our mental state. It's really important to learn how to come to prayer with an open consciousness. You know, when we do meditation, I look at, depending on what form that is, and there's, I'm sure, a myriad of ways that we could look at, well, what is prayer, what is meditation, what is worship? The way I look at it is that as we get with what is our highest nature, our God nature, we come into a relationship with the truth that is God's truth. It's a truth beyond any person. So I look at it that it's a transcendental truth that nobody gets to control. And we also come into the nature of God, and in its highest form, that nature is the love, the beauty, the grace, the perfection, the eternal nature. It transcends what's in this world. I view contemplation as a quiet state to let the mind, in a way, catch as best it can the frequency of how we would relate to our divine nature, the higher nature, the truths. So in contemplation, it's a willingness to pause. So often it's just an open way of thinking, like real thinking, where we're processing as best we can without need to conceptualize or box things into some limited, conditioned way of relating. It's open thinking. And spiritual exercise is something that we view as getting onto the consciousness of our soul and having awareness of the soul's nature. I kind of look at spiritual exercises as having an inner guide, that's part of how that works. Not that that couldn't be working through prayer and meditation and contemplation. It's just that as we move into what we're referring to as spiritual exercise and the movement of spiritual inner awareness, it becomes a process that's active awareness, alert, awake, don't leave your brains at the door, and also that there's an inner master, someone we call the traveler, it's working in accordance with what could be considered a hierarchy of the spirit or other masters. And that to me is, as a person comes into that awareness, then it becomes more relevant. And if a person says, I don't know what you're talking about, that's okay. Just go with calling to God, and you know, we work with names of God, sacred names of God, and what does that mean? It's what God answers to. So what would get God to turn around and say, what do you want? What do you want with me? How would we call to God in such a way as that happens? Well, of course, it's important in our attitude. It's our devotion. It's our dedication, our consecration, that we have a sacred intention to be with God. And that can be sit still. If you want to be with God, you need to quiet yourself. And often that's what's necessary in spiritual exercise, just as it is with worship and meditation and prayer. It's really required that we let go of our worries and our wants and our desires, so that we're not treating God as some kind of order desk to make our demands. We're coming to God to listen, to be a humble student, and more importantly, a humble servant. You know, eventually, the realization brings responsibility to help others and to be someone who is the light and someone who is the love of what God would be doing in the flesh in the world.
You reminded me that I've heard JR say so many times to check it out, not to believe everything that you hear. And you were talking about within the spiritual exercises of an inner guide. How do you kind of differentiate? Because, you know, we have egos, so, you know, we hear these voices sometimes in terms of information we might get, but how do we distinguish between it, whether it's the ego speaking or whether it may be a spirit or some intuition coming through for us?
Well, Jesus answered that really beautifully. You know, by the fruits we'll know the nature of the tree. So, and in some ways that might be we'll taste that fruit, and you might find, well, it's bitter. Well, okay, then it's not ripe, or it's not ready, or it's something that's decayed and rotten and makes you sick. And it can be like that, that we're checking it out by finding out the nature of what it is. And really, I would say it's not necessary to believe anything, and we encourage people not to believe anything, to go directly to your experience and to realize that experience is being opened so that there's aspects of what we are to learn that are coming forward for us consciously. There's obviously most of what is present is what we don't know versus what we do know. And that just means stay open, keep going.
And that's probably one of the reasons why there's often a suggestion to keep a journal, to write things down so you can start checking things out more thoroughly.
Yes, I kind of look at it like if you were going to solve a puzzle and you didn't know what the whole of that puzzle was, you just had pieces. And as you go through the inner experiences, the pieces of the puzzle come forward. And initially you may not know what that's about, like why would I see that or have this kind of an experience. And it's good to, in some way, note them, and then later review. And in the review, there's often an opportunity to get a bigger picture, kind of gestalt of what we're looking at, so we see the whole versus the pieces.
Yeah, I must admit that I do write a lot of things down, and when I look back on some of those things, I do find it quite amazing, the information that comes forward. The other thing that I do also find surprising is I often get information on what I need to do, but somehow I don't necessarily do anything with it at that time, and then later it feels like, ah, now I understand what that is. So it's a wonderful way, as I said, to check things out and to really, it helps, for me, it just helps me stay on track.
Right, and there is progression.
Mm-hmm.
Just like if we were studying course material, applying that course material in some
form where we have to be able to demonstrate we can apply it, we can solve the problem, we can give the correct response. And as we learn that, we become more aware of that we're handling things with greater peace, greater understanding, greater joy. And that's a progression. And it brings us into more opportunities to learn.
Newton, one of the things that I find sometimes is that I get information and it's actually not to necessarily do it this second. It's kind of just giving me that information, almost like kind of preparing the way. So again, it's about constantly checking things out and if it works for you.
Right. Exactly. And I find there's another part to what you're talking about, which has to do with, well, what does trusting God have to do with this? My point of view is everything. That we're destined, it is our truth, our reality, that we're in partnership. We're in a co-creatorship with God. And we're beginning in some ways, and in some ways we're learning more about that creatorship and that partnership. And as we learn how it works, we realize there's no moment when we're abandoned, when we're not in that relationship. And as we learn how to take on the wisdom of God, the love of God, then it becomes personal, that's also our love, it's also our wisdom. There's no real difference between the love of God and the wisdom of God in us. It's just that we have this capacity called a human being, and that part's limited.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay, but as we learn how to do it at the greatest capacity we can, there's an expansion in that. So we're growing. And that would be one of the keys, is do it 100%. Do it as much as you can, and that will lead to a greater ability. And it starts translating into a person who has confidence because they're walking in the ability that is God. And they're also walking in alignment and harmony. So there's a trust that whatever God brings forward, I know it has purpose. So I face it with courage rather than fear. And you know, the most difficult place I find is when things don't go our way, the expectations that we have, that there's a reaction there. I mean, I know exactly what that is, and I'm sure anybody listening knows exactly what that is. You know, there's a sense of, how dare you, or why would you do that? I had this expectation. I had this plan. Why didn't it go my way? And it's like, God has a bigger plan. Let go. Open up to that. Be patient. Well, I don't get it. I don't know what this is. I don't understand what's going on. Would you mind being patient so you can understand? And maybe that takes some time. And would you be willing to give your time to have that understanding? Or are you just going to be upset and mad that it didn't go your way now? And these are choices where we find out how willing we are to let go and let God and trust.
Well, I have to confess that my life did get a lot easier when I recognized that God probably could assist me run my life a lot easier than I could. So that kind of choice to surrender, of recognizing that, you know, it's a willfulness almost and a control, and just letting that go and surrendering and just come into that place of, as you said, the co-creation with God. And in a couple of weeks, John, we've got Paul Kay coming on, and he's going to be talking about tithing and seeding, which is kind of a lovely, seeding is a lovely thing to do as a co-creator with God. And the other thing, in terms of just kind of wrapping up a lot of the things today, one of the major things that you talk a lot about is gratitude. And I think John Rogers said that gratitude is an antidote to negativity. And I'm just going to do a little extract from your book again. And you say one of the primary ways to love any condition is to be thankful for it. Start out with gratitude and realize that if an adjustment is needed, it's an internal one. There's no use in blaming the outer condition by asking why or how dare you or creating a sense of betrayal or saying, I don't deserve it. You might as well look into the mirror and see that the conditions are reflecting your relationship to yourself. Realize that at some level, the conditions have all been agreed to by you and that every condition serves your learning and growth. Could you talk to us a little bit more about that attitude of gratitude?
Sure. It's looking into the condition, and obviously that's easy when we like what we're experiencing and we agree with what we're experiencing. It's easy then. The challenge is when we don't like it and we don't agree with it, can you find gratitude then? And it really is the discernment along with the willingness to find something that you appreciate, find the value. If it's dark, maybe there's a little tiny pinprick hole in the corner where there's some light, and just to appreciate that light. If it's solitary confinement, to realize that it's a great time to do the meditation, the contemplation, the prayer, to slow down. Maybe it's like, well, I didn't want to slow down that much. But just to understand, well, something is working here, and what would that be? What would be the blessing in the solitary confinement? And there'd be something. I don't have to listen to people I don't want to listen to. Well, I don't like listening to myself. Okay, well, maybe I can work on that full time while I'm here by myself. It's just learning how to use these conditions in our lives as something that we gain value from. And so it is an attitude. John Roger called it the attitude of gratitude. I'm sure others have called it that as well. And it becomes a way of relating that we find we can use everything to learn, to grow, to get stronger, to get healthier, to increase our patience, to work on our compassion. There's just all kinds of things that are always present in any condition if we're willing to access them.
I remember when I was spending some time in the States a few years ago and financially was going through some challenging times, and I remember looking down and I was always picking up little 1 cent pieces, and it reminded me, you know, growing up from that song Pennies from Heaven.
Right.
And I would think, isn't that amazing, you know, God's giving me money. And one day somebody was with me and they saw me picking up this 1 cent piece and they went, why would you even stoop just to pick up 1 cent? But to me, the gratitude can be in even the smallest things.
That's right.
So, mm-hmm.
These are things that often lead to 2 cents and then 5 cents and 100 cents and 1,000 cents and 1,000,000 cents. And after a while, that starts making sense.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I often have dreams too where I'm actually down and I keep picking up larger pieces of money.
Well, they're minting them.
So,
having that sense about yourself that you're entitled. And I don't mean by that like you're superior, but that there's so much abundance and prosperity in the world that it's just a matter of inheriting what's already ours to inherit, partaking, that we were chosen to be abundant and be prosperous, but we need to choose back.
And we also need to believe that that's possible, don't we?
Sure. If we're dealing with a creator with all things are possible, then whose move is it? I always find out it's our move. Like God's already made the move. Next, like what are we doing to increase that manifestation from the unmanifest? One of my favorite examples is, 20 years ago, we probably could have looked out and said, there's already too many hamburger businesses around. How could there possibly be another hamburger business? And then something comes along and said, well, if you do it like this, the way they want it, you can be successful, and here's another hamburger business that's successful. And say, well, what does that have to do with abundance? It's just, well, instead of seeing it limited, that there's too many, or there's not room for more, just decide, I'm just making room for myself. You know, I want to have enough money or prosperity to do the things that I'd like to do. And it's not about, you know, having a moat around my castle and guards with spears to keep everybody out. There's another way, which would be share the wealth. And that there's a practical way to do that so that there's abundance for all.
Well, that's really lovely, and I'm afraid we're running out of time here, and there's so much more we could talk about, but I just want to reiterate that your book is called You Are the Blessings, Meditations and Reflections on Life, God, and Us. It's just a wonderful book, and I have to tell you, John, I mean, I do go to bed with you most nights. You do realize this. I love your CD with your blessings on it, and I find it a really lovely way each, you know, when I listen to it, it doesn't seem to matter what I've been through or what sort of kind of mood I'm in. It will always lift me. And I think one of the things that I really love about, you know, listening to you, being in seminars with you, is that you just have, you express things in such a way that I always feel better about myself. And I think that's terrific because that just brings me back into greater loving. So I'm very blessed to have you on the show today. Thank you so much. And just to let everybody know that on the website of my website on bbsradio.com, I have got John's contact for, it's theblessings.org, your website, John. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Or and msia.org will also work.
That's
so
correct.
msia.org is another way to connect into the work I'm doing and John Rogers' work.
That's terrific. Well, thank you very much indeed, John. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today.
And see, and time goes on. Did you notice that? Even though the time for this show in some way stops, that there's time for something else now, something better. So nothing to fear, something to look forward to.
That is true. Well, God bless you all.
God bless you.
Beirish Beishan.
Beirish Beishan.